Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in Wine and Space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss. Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome to our Pride special. It's the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
I'm Paul Islesworth.
What are we watching this year?
Well, seeing as somebody has, how can I put this politely, Greeked like a three-year-old every year so far, because we've been watching some historically accurate drama.
Been moved to tears by the plight of the homosexuals, yes.
We're going to watch a sitcom.
Hey.
Excellent. And what is said sitcom?
Vicious. It's a sitcom from 2013, starring Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi as a...
2013, really?
Yes. As a gay couple who have kind of grown beyond their relationship, but still are in their relationship, and their slightly eccentric group of friends, and an apparently attractive neighbour who moves in downstairs, who I kind of can't see the appeal of, but...
2013, it feels like yesterday. Because I remember seeing the trailers for it and being, frankly, appalled that these two stalwarts of British TV were involved in something that looked like, are you being served?
I think that was the intention of it, though, wasn't it? That it was supposed to be like a one set.
Yeah, harking back to the classic era of sort of Croft and Perry sitcoms, but with a more modern, bitey edge.
Speaking of bitey edges, shall we get the tonic screwdriver out and open up the gin?
We should.
Shall we?
And what do we have for our Pride special? What says gay rights and equality? What have you picked for us?
Let me pick up the tonic screwdriver and wave the wand. With your permission, gentlemen, I'm knocking on your bottoms with Bottom Knocker.
You do not have my permission, do you?
Well, gentlemen, the infobollock says, why Bottom Knocker? Well, following the success of our Stokey Oatcake Gin, it seems like the perfect opportunity to honour one of the pottery's most historically iconic trades, that of the Cigar Maker's Bottom Knocker. As the title suggests, the Bottom Knocker was an assistant to the Cigar Maker, whose trade was to produce clay cigars, brackets vessels, in which to place unfired ware in order to protect it from the smoke and impurities while being fired in the old bottle kilns. The Cigar Maker and the Bottom Knocker used a wooden oak mallet or maul in order to flatten and fashion the clay, which inspired us to create an oak-steeped gin, producing a mature oaky flavour in honour of the Bottom Knocker. Well, quite. That's certainly a lengthy bottom knocking. Info bollocks. Gentlemen, as ever, what do we think of the nasal appraisal?
It smells quite sweet. And it looks like a specimen.
I'm not getting anything from that. Dive down, gentlemen. Dive in. Sweet and also sooty. I have no idea what to make of that. It's sweet gin mixed with soot, and I am not blown away. It's interesting, it's different. I certainly like the name, and the info bollocks is certainly well dreamed up. It fits the area, I'm just not sure I actually like it. It's a 3 purely for the fact that it's interesting. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Pretty much the same, to be honest. It's got a sweet... It does have oaky notes to it, but not particularly strong ones. It's sweet with a sort of barky, bitter aftertaste.
Yeah, it's got a liquid... I get the fun of the botty knocker thing, but it's all right. I'll give it a 3.
I'm really disappointed with this. This has been sat on the shelf for a while, waiting for the Pride special.
Oh.
I know. And it, you know,
if it's gay, I'll give it a 4.
Well, it's got the word bottom in it.
No, 5.
And knocker, 6.
A million. It's a 3 for me.
Bottom knocker. It's like a sitcom title by
Jimmy Spate.
Yes.
After Curry and Chips, you can imagine what bottom knocker would be like.
Yeah.
We could watch some Curry and Chips at some point.
I'm sure we will.
I'm fairly sure we won't, because we've seen one episode and it was fucking awful.
Terrible, terrible stuff. Anyway, shall we move on to nicer things? It's time, gentlemen, we descended into the undergallery of Podcasting House for the choice of 3 doors.
Well, I think in keeping with our previous Pride themes, we should go into the Imaginarium and reimage classic shows in a gay theme.
The Gay Imaginarium. Entrare!
I think we'll have a gay version of Crossroads, where Meg was running a knocking shop.
Cue the sig. Crossdressers.
Crossroads.
Okay, yes. What on earth are Benny and Miss Diane up to?
Mr. Diane.
Paul, do you have an alternative?
Although it's well tucked to start with.
Home and away. Home and playing away.
Homo and away.
Homo and away. Yes, set in summer gay, it's all about the lovely Australians that are struggling to come out with their homosexuality.
Nabombs.
The lying doctors, all of them. Every single one of them is in the closet. Why are they all Australian, poor bastards? Take the lie road. In the Scottish...
It's still going on.
Oh, it's still going on, yes. BeastEnders, it's all about bestiality.
Or EastBenders. Cochranation Street.
Benderdale Farm. Paul, you're letting the side down here.
Oh, I didn't realise you were still...
Oh, we're still playing it, yes. Yes.
Holly Blokes, but...
St. Felchware. Shall we stop this here? So, having slammed the door shut mercifully on the Gay Imaginarium, we've got our drinks, we've got it queued up. It's time for episode 1, series 1 of Vicious, Ron VT.
So who were you squawking at on the phone just now?
What? My mother!
Did you finally tell her about us?
I'm waiting for the right time.
It's been 48 years.
This is our friend Viola Dash.
Yes, she's our friend, and Stuart here is my friend.
Okay. Has anybody ever said you remind them of Zac Efron? That's a person, right? Or is it a place?
You know, when we filmed that Doctor Who episode, I never dreamt it would become one of the most iconic roles of my career.
Or only.
Well, we've just watched the first 3 episodes of Vicious. When was that from? Ah, we've done our research well. Consult the Oracle. It was from 2013, and it ran for 2 series. Dr. Axton, this is where you come in with a vague appraisal. What have we just watched? Oh, what's the... Well, yes, thank you. What's the setup of this thing?
2 rooms in a flat. We don't really see beyond that. It's a 5-handed sitcom. Those first 3 episodes, all we see is 6 characters.
Who are the other 2?
Mason and... Can't remember the other woman's name. The one who keeps going into...
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
The 2 main characters are Freddie and Stuart, a gay couple who've been together for 50-odd years, played by Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi. There's also their close friend Violet, played by Frances De La Tour, and their new upstairs neighbour, Ash, played by somebody you recognised from Game of Thrones.
No, Paul, you recognised him. I thought he was a character from The Archers, but he's not. It's, what did you say his name was?
He's called Ewan Rion, I think.
And the first episode, there's a couple of other friends of Freddie and Stuart. I think he's called Mason. I can't remember the other woman's name. And it's basically Freddie and Stuart sniping at each other, sniping at everybody else, and trying to sort of ingratiate themselves with Ash, who is younger and fitter than they are.
Mm.
That's pretty much the entire premise of all of the three episodes and the entire series, really. It's very plot light, and the plot is there basically to hang insults off. But some of the insults are wonderful.
Well, Paul, you and I we've briefly commented this for Nine Bob Note. On rewatching this thing, I was dead wrong. I really quite enjoyed those three episodes.
It had a lot of moments in it where we all really laughed.
Properly laughed, yeah. Because my memory of it is that it was all a bit John Inman, Are You Being Served? Gay sitcoms like, or gay characters in sitcoms like they used to be. I mean, to an extent it was that, but I don't know whether it would have been as anywhere near as funny or good if it wasn't for Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi. The way that they did it, if those had been two other actors, I don't think it would have been as funny. It's because they're both so well respected now. I've never seen them play roles like that before in anything else. They are, as you've both commented, sending themselves up, and that's what makes it funny.
But, I mean, you could make the comment of anything that either of them are in, that part of the thing that makes it is them being such good actors. Mm. That's a consequence of them being really good actors.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. I can't imagine anybody else playing that role. Possibly Patrick Stewart, because if you've seen him with Ian McKellen.
Well, they are best mates, genuinely mates, yeah. Yes, I'm with you. Yeah, Patrick Stewart could have carried that off, yes. But I'm pleasantly surprised, because Frances Dillitoe is a great foil for them, and she's best known, of course, as Miss Jones in Rising Damp. This is several decades on, but it's very well written, and I can't remember who wrote it. It was on the opening credits, of course. Anyone? Oracle? No.
Nope.
It was written by somebody called Gary Giannetti, not familiar with, although it was directed by Ed Bye. I best know him for Red Dwarf. He did a lot of the BBC Red Dwarfs.
So what else has Mr. Giannetti done?
Well, he doesn't have his own page, so...
not much.
He does. He's an American television writer, producer and actor. Notable work, Will and Grace and Family Guy. Yeah, executive producer on Will and Grace.
I mean, some of the dialogue did remind me a little bit of Frasier. So some of the sort of snidiness that Frasier and Niles come out with towards each other. I mean, this was another level. The nastiness that Freddie and Stuart are to each other. And in one episode where Freddie's depressed and starts behaving nicely, Stuart's just saying, I can't cope with this. I can't live like this.
Again, the cattiness about it, it all looped back to the performances. Because although, you know, they're both openly gay actors, they haven't been forever, though, have they?
Oh, Ian McKellen has for a good long while.
He was late 80s, wasn't he? I think somebody out him or something.
Oh, that I don't know, but I know he and Michael Cashman were both very pro-gay rights, and I think they were involved in the setting up of Stonewall, although certainly heavily involved in Stonewall and Pride protest back to the 80s, back to Michael Cashman's time on EastEnders.
Right.
And on Doctor Who.
Oh, yes, of course. He was in a well-loved serial from Peter Davison's era called Time Flight, which is where they ran out of money.
script.
He played an outrageously camp airline captain. John Nathan Turner was terrified because he wanted to present the right thing to British Airways because they wanted to use Concorde to film on. And when the guy turned up, Michael Cashman and the other fella whose name I can't remember that were playing.
There were three of them, weren't there?
Were there three? The airline officers, they were just being outrageously camp on set, and the BA guy took one look and said, yep. Perfect casting.
But anyway, back to people who are actually in this.
But yes, getting back to Vicious.
When you first look at it, it's a very basic
premise
because there are a handful of actors. There are two sets. There's the living room of the flat and the kitchen of the flat.
And the kitchen you barely see. It's not. There's only a couple of scenes I can remember seeing it in.
Yeah. There are some invisible characters as well. So there's Stuart's mother, who's always on the phone, and he's manufacturing more and more dramatic excuses to put the phone down. and there's their dog, Balthazar.
Oh, is it a dog? I thought it was a cat.
Bloody big for a cat, the size of that basket and the lump in it.
I'd got it into my head that it was a cat, with it being 20 years old. It's one hell of an age for a dog. But either way, yes, this unseen character. They try in various ways to keep awake, kick the basket, and in one scene he's got an air horn. That was a nice touch.
So there are little running jokes throughout that, and Violet trying to come on to Ash, and Ash being more and more and more uncomfortable about it all.
She keeps trying to find ways to get him to take his shirt off or get naked in various ways. It's funny. One of the funny things is at the time that Ash was in this, he was also in Game of Thrones, which I don't think either of you have seen.
No.
He played a character called Ramsay Bolton, who's like the most evil and horrible character. So to see him come on and just be this slightly goofy, naive kid is quite funny.
The one thing that I thought, because you have to suspend disbelief with sitcoms a lot of the time, why would that lad keep going back to that flat? Every time he goes, it's a horrible nightmare, just full of either snide insults or somebody trying to sexually molest him.
Maybe he likes the attention.
Maybe he's got daddy issues, yes.
Or maybe just finds all the insults wildly entertaining. It's things like when Freddie is preparing for an audition and says, "Tell me truthfully, do you think I could pass for 50? Yeah. Stuart says, "You can barely pass for alive."
There's some great dialogue in it. The one thing I will say is that each of the three episodes we've watched, it's finished on a real bang of a line. I think all three were an insult. Certainly the last one, which was the one where he got a part in Downton Abbey. All the way through the episode, they've been mollycoddling him because he's a little bit depressed that Ash is getting more success as an actor on his first go than, not Stuart, what's his name?
Freddie
has. And the last line of the episode is they've watched this one line scene that he's in. God, you were shit. The way it was delivered, though. Again, it is a testament to, because the material's not, for, well, it's not world class. It's just, it's like you said, the setup, the delivery, the people involved in it is all very simplistic and plot light. You are watching it for the performances rather than.
And for the writing.
But it could easily have been stuffed up by a lesser cast. That's true for everything, of course, but.
Yeah,
it's not.
If you had Freddie Starr and Joe Pasquale, you wouldn't have had the.
Might not have had the gravitas, darling.
Wouldn't have worked quite as well.
No. But no, I didn't think it was the strongest sitcom I've ever seen. It was just the whole setup was really, that it was genuinely amusing. There were a few genuine belly laughs out of that.
Yeah. I mean, when I first saw it, because I know I watched it on first transmission and I wasn't wildly impressed. And then watching it again, you realise the point isn't to have a dramatic plotline that is ridiculous and hilarious like you would get in Fawlty Towers or the British Empire or 2.4 Children or something like that. The point is, there is the loosest of plot that those characters can just use as an excuse to slag each other off.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the entertainment of it. So in that, it's a bit more like Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
Which I couldn't, I don't know why.
Which I don't just... like, because, I mean, both Vicious and Gimme, Gimme, Gimme are stereotypes.
True.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think Vicious is a more comfortable stereotype.
Go on, you'll have to explain that one to me. Why? You're coming to this from quite, in fact, all of you are coming to it from a very different angle than I am. Why are they more comfortable stereotypes?
Well, because it's, the characters aren't as unpleasant.
In
Vicious.
Really?
Oh, they're sniding to each other.
Yeah.
But they enjoy what they do. Violet wouldn't carry on coming around if she didn't enjoy being in the middle of the drama and the snidey comments. And the whole bit about, you were my best friend, but you did something 45 years ago. Well, I can't remember that. And then a few scenes later, it demonstrates that she can absolutely remember what she did 45 years ago. So she's going into that with her eyes open. Whereas Gimme, 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 they're just really unpleasant people.
I've never really watched any of it. I remember seeing bits of it at the time, and it was, because that was in the age when, they were coming to the tail end, but there were sitcoms on all the time. Every night was a different sitcom in those days. Yeah. And it was just up with the rations. I can't pin down why I didn't like it, but I didn't like it. So maybe that was it.
Of the two, I preferred the Linda LaHughes character. I really didn't like the whatever the failed actor character that Jem Strafer's played was. It's not one I've gone back and rewatched. And it's not that he's a bad actor. He's brilliant in Thin Blue Line. I think it's just, it was all negative stereotyping, played for laughs, in a way that this kind of wasn't.
Right, again,
just better written.
Possibly, because I didn't see anything particularly positive about either of the two leads.
I think it's kind of, every line that they had was sniping at each other and being bitchy, but you could tell, and, you know, like you said, the fact that they've been together for so long, but you could feel the affection between them, even though they hate each other, they also love each other. And, you know, like you say, that's why Francis de la Tour keeps coming round just to be insulted.
And maybe with Gimme, 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 there's a level of desperation to the characters that there isn't in Vicious.
Yeah, in Vicious, they're happy with their lot, aren't they?
They're settled with themselves. They're settled with their life. They enjoy the bitchiness backwards and forwards. You get the feeling this is the way they like spending their time and choose to do it. Whereas Gimme, 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 it's two people who want more than they have and different to what they have.
Right, again, not having seen it for a long time, not being intimately familiar, I'll take your word for that. But no, it was, I did enjoy it. And usually that relentless level of negative sniping would get on my tits, but that was genuinely funny.
And it's not one-way sniping. It's backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And for all Violet is the butt of their jokes a lot of the time, she gives as good as she gets at times.
Yes.
Yeah, it was just very funny.
But no, I'm glad we went back and reappraised that, because it's, I have always had a bit of a, I don't know what the word is. I've not looked back on it and thought that was the pinnacle of their careers, and it wasn't. I've always thought it was a bit of a, it was done for the fact that they'd got Derry Jacobi and Ian McKellen rather than because it was, at the time it was relentlessly trailed. There was nothing else. Every time you switched on ITV, there was a trailer for it.
And that may have been part of why I wasn't as wildly keen on it at the time, because it was seen as such a big event, and you've got Ian McKellen, Derek Jacobi, these two monumental national treasures of actors who are playing a gay couple, and isn't this going to be amazing and fantastic? And it isn't amazing and fantastic. It's very good.
Yeah.
It's very entertaining, but it's not a high point of television. It's not even a high point of sitcoms.
So how would you rate it?
Ooh,
on a scale of 1 to 5? Is it 1 to 5 you do it on?
We don't race at all. But now that you've thrown that wild card.
That blank look. Have you rated these things?
No, we don't. No, no, no. Not for TV. We've never done it for Extremos. But we do it for oral intercourse. And we do. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We're very good at raising that. We do it for Tonic Screwdrivers. And we do it for Kinky Boots. Oh, and we do Feather Boas for 9 Bob Nell. But yeah, Extremos, we've never had a race. And we've got the Drag Queen Index.
Which we forgot to do for the New Year episode. We didn't do a Drag Queen Index for a TV movie.
I know, but I was absolutely arseholed. as soon as I hit spacebar for that recording session, I was up to bed to the point where I just lay down. He walked into the room and said, "Are you all right?" "Yeah, just pissed." Which never happens. Never to the point where he asks if I'm all right. No,
you don't have to start doing it.
We'll do it as a one-off. Let's do it as a Pride one-off. What are we rating it?
We can't say pussy. I was going to say you could say...
No, we can't.
rate it in pussy. Oh, in puffs.
Puffs.
Puffs,
yes.
How many sugar puffs would we...
See, it's tempting to say how many insults out of 5, but that's a bit obvious.
Oh, you need a generic scale.
How many?
Because we're not rating it. A gay generic scale. Oh, we for each one, yeah.
Well, why don't we borrow from 9 Bob Note and rate it in Feather Boas?
Yes, good idea.
Cue the jingle. Gentlemen.
3, I think. I mean, I really enjoyed it. There were some absolutely genuine laugh out loud lines. The performances were brilliant, but there is pretty much no plot to speak of. It's all based on two sets and looks a little bit cheap.
I'd probably go with 3, yeah. I did enjoy it. Not the best thing I've ever seen, but a long way from the worst thing I've ever seen. And those two, the way they sparked off each other, brilliant. Three, middle of the road for me, but recommended.
I'd probably agree 3. It's something that if I was flicking through the channels and it was on, I'd watch it again, but I wouldn't
seek it out,
yeah.
4 from me for the sheer laugh out loud factor.
very fair, yeah. Again, just dialing back to that, just for the last comment, it's very difficult to make me genuinely belly laugh at things these days. That genuinely did, in fairness. Yeah. So on that note, we shall sign us off for this Pride special. Gentlemen, have you got anything to say about Pride in general for this year that you'd
Happy Pride.
Yeah, have a good one.
I mean, we're recording this in January because historically Pride specials have been recorded in a massive rush about a week before and get released a month late. So we thought this time we will be organised and record it during our January recording session. So what that means is that we have absolutely no clue what's going to be happening with COVID, whether there's going to be a lockdown. So hopefully when you're listening to this, we're actually starting to get back to normal lives. That would be nice.
Yes. I think if the opportunity...
Happy normal Pride.
Happy normal Pride. If the opportunity arises, let's have a big gay night out and you can show me what it's all like, because I've never been to a Pride special event rally thing.
Manchester rather than London. London's a bit dull.
Marchy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've been a few times, and after 10 minutes you get bored of just watching an endless parade of people walking past. And it's good, it's important, it's life-affirming for the people who are travelling and marching, and it is an important thing to do, but it's dull to watch. Whereas Manchester, you get all the shiny floats and...
drag queens.
Yeah, you get the whole lot. And it's more a carnival than a political march. So we'll do Manchester.
It's also nearer.
That's good.
So thank you, boys and girls, for listening. We hope you have a nice time, whatever you're doing for Pride. We'll be back next time. Ta-ta.
Bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
The Exton Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.